The Friday Review
with Jacinta Parsons and Brian Nankervis
on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Hi, it's Jacinta and Brian from The Friday Review.
And we caught up with Jacob Dylan about a brand new documentary called Echo in the Canyon. Jacob, on the one hand, your film is a beautiful exercise in going back to a highly creative and influential moment in musical history, but we also get this really strong sense of the here and the now with artists like Cat Power, Beck, Norah Jones, and yourself as host. How important was it to not just stay in the mid to late 60s?
Well, I think what we're really trying to do is show how the influence wasn't just about that timeline in the mid-60s. If the influence has carried over to, I guess you'd say, my generation and my peers, and that's how impactful that music was.
You were pretty familiar with all that material, or did you discover some new things?
Oh, no, I was very familiar with it, but by speaking to all these artists, yeah, I learned stuff that I hadn't known. Nothing salacious or anything like that, but it was just interesting hearing firsthand from all of them how they were influencing one another, and really how different that time is from what we do today. We share in a different way, but they were very communal, and they were very, because of Lowell Canyon in this specific scene, they were right next to each other, and they were impressing each other every day with what they could come up with. You know, it was so early in that realm of rock and roll, with melody and words becoming so much more important. Just like anything else, these were witnesses to a moment that's really crucial and important to the history of rock and roll.
And it's really interesting that you refined it to the years between 1965 and 1967, just those 2-3 years there. Why did you make that decision?
It's not really a full documentary about Lowell Canyon, because that'd be a very much broader documentary. But being someone who's been in bands my whole life, or, since a teenager, that aspect of it really appealed to me. But, later, Lowell Canyon, there's a lot more that happens Lowell Canyon afterwards. I mean, you can make many documentaries, but it seemed good for us to focus in on just 1 or 2 years there where you have these mega talents who really hadn't figured out yet that they'd probably all eventually go solo and have their own careers. But this is a time where you had multiple singers, multiple songwriters in each of these groups, which, nowadays we mostly focus on one artist within the group that's influencing the music more so than others. But this was a really special time when they hadn't quite gotten there yet. And obviously it didn't last long, really, because people started realizing more about careers and who was writing the songs. But this is kind of a really innocent time of being in a band. And I guess a lot of it for me, too, just came from being someone who's in a band. I'm always interested in what that dynamic is like for groups.
Yes.
So it's never the same for any groups.
The tensions within the band, and particularly the point you make, is that many of these bands had multiple singers and multiple songwriters, the Mamas and the Papas. Buffalo Springfield, The Byrds, and that did give a sense of tension. The other bit that I loved is the point you make where in New York City, people would go to clubs. In Laurel Canyon, they hung out at people's houses.
Yeah. Well, I suppose every part of the world and the country has different ways of doing that. If you're in the Midwest, you spend a lot of time in the basement with people playing music. And it's so cold outside. In New York, you had the cafes and you had the city streets. And here, I suppose what made Laurel Canyon so magical to a lot of these people who first came here is that it really is the wilderness right here in the middle of Los Angeles. You're really 5 minutes away from all those famous clubs and studios that you could be barefoot and you could have coyote in your yard if you're living in the hills somewhere. But you're right here in Los Angeles. It was kind of an interesting spot that just developed.
You interview some incredible characters in this film. Brian Wilson can be a tricky interview, we've heard, but you seem to get the best out of him.
I may not always love you, but But long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you.
You've never been on that side of that interview desk before. Who were some of your favorites that you met that you, you know, had this experience with?
Well, you know, I've known a lot of these people for quite a while. But Brian is on my head now, but I'm aware of it, and I'm aware of his presence. He's well earned a position where he doesn't have to talk about any of those days or anything if he doesn't want to. It's not really going to make his career bigger or broader or more valuable to him necessarily. So I understood that, and it was something that to sit down with him, you know, was really giving him an opportunity to maybe get to some things he hadn't talked about. He's not promoting a record. I'm not an investigative journalist. I'm just another singer-songwriter who hopefully made people more comfortable than they might normally be.
Your background and you having such a deep experience yourself in the same world, there is that inherent trust, I guess.
Those people are giants to me, and I wouldn't ever consider myself on their level, so there's no way to prepare for that. I'm 14 years old when I'm sitting next to Brian Wilson, or even Jackson Browne is someone who I've known, but it's still, you know, his music has impacted me in such a large way that I'm not going to feel like an equal to them. You know, maybe there's elements of myself being a singer-songwriter also that make them more comfortable, but I don't come with any particular knowledge that makes it easier for anybody. I mean, it's still music. We're still impressed by other people and intimidated.
We're speaking to Jacob Dylan about his film Echo in the Canyon. Jacob, interesting to hear of the influence of the Beatles. And in fact, they also were influenced. You know, the story goes that they heard Pet Sounds and thought, right, we've got to take it one step further.
I think Jackson Browne says it best in the film. And I imagine somebody influencing the Beatles.
Yes.
You know, which is, I don't think most of us can understand that or get our heads around that. But yeah, I mean, there's a big story with that is that 12-string guitar, which, you know, kind of accidentally ends up with George when it's supposed to go to John. And then that, you know, the birds kind of copy that. And then the birds, the Beatles hear that. And, you know, they're influencing each other, these giant groups from across the pond. It's pretty fascinating.
Call your number on my wall.
But I think it's also a testament to it must have been a lot easier then to be, you know, being influenced then was a little simpler than today, especially with the internet. There's just a gazillion bands.
Yes.
So it's really hard to know who many people are. But yeah, they were directly competitive with one another. But, you know, I think they acknowledged that competitive in a friendly way, but just wanting to one up each other if they could.
Yep.
You know?
Graham Nash makes that great point where, you know, there'd be a knock on the door, someone would walk in with a guitar and they'd share a song. Michelle Phillips, Jacob, is a great, great part of the movie, particularly talking about being in New York City and her husband, John Phillips, wakes her up in the middle of the night and he's written this song about the lure of California. All the leaves are brown, the sky is grey.
That's when he woke me up in the middle of the night and he said, I'm writing a song, listen to this. And he played, all the leaves are brown and the sky is gray. I've been for a while.
There is something magical about California, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, besides the obvious, I mean, I think there's something magical about New York City too, or wherever you might want to go. But you know, I think Tom Petty says that well in the film, which is just that California was like it was freedom. It was just outdoors. It was Hollywood. It was movie stars. It was a whole different whole different landscape from where other people were coming from, migrating from. To some degree, it's still like that. But you can imagine then, I mean, not everybody had traveled the world then. Today, it's hard to find someone who hasn't been to California. But in 1965, when Tom Petty had dreamed of coming to California, not all his friends had ever would ever get to California. So it was, I guess, it represented some just, freedom and creativity and just go do what you want. I think it was in California. You they had a lot of great studios here, and the great record companies used to be mostly in New York City. That's why the bands were there. But once they started setting up studios out here in Los Angeles, and record companies started coming here, gave people a great opportunity to come here and work.
As you mentioned at the top, this is an enormous film. You know, those 65 to 67, it could continue to go. But because it's been reduced to that, we miss out on artists like Joni Mitchell and also The Doors. Any chance there might be an Echo and the Canyon Part 2?
Yeah, I guess anything's possible. I mean, it's a lot of work, and it's you have to have the subjects got to be willing and they got to be around to do it. And I think that some of that's been covered. There are lots of documentaries on Laurel Canyon that touch on Joni Mitchell and The Doors and a lot of other groups that we didn't quite get to. But because we really zeroed in on just those 2 years there, spoken to people that mentioned that what about Joni Mitchell, and that really wasn't the point. Joni Mitchell is really about the second or third wave of Laurel Canyon, which is more singer-songwriters. The music changes, then it becomes more internal, it becomes more reflective. These bands were trying to write hit songs to be on the radio and having a blast doing it, multiple singers and harmonies, and it was it deserved focus. It deserved one documentary on just that. Otherwise, in a different documentary, you're probably going to blaze right over the birds in about 10 minutes, and we wanted to talk more about that.
I thought Roger McGuinn was a great interview subject, very smart, very giving and generous, and we sort of heard that great moment with David Crosby saying, no, I wasn't sacked from the Byrds because of that song Triad. I was sacked because I was a jerk.
You want to know how it will.
He said it himself. I didn't have to say it. No one else had to say it. So I guess that's kind of true. He's had a number of years to reflect upon that. I don't, he's honest. I guess, You got to say David Crosby's honest. I mean, he's never claimed to be somebody who's working too hard on maintaining or making friendships. He's pretty honest about it. He takes credit for what he did right, what he didn't do right.
Hey, Jacob, a real pleasure to speak to you. The film is a ripper. You've got the final ever interview with Tom Petty, which is great. There's live footage. More power to you. It's just great.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Jacob Dylan joining us this afternoon on the Friday Review, speaking about that brilliant documentary, Echo in the Canyon.